Hello, and welcome to the 404 Media Podcast, where we bring you unparalleled access to hidden worlds, both online and IRL. 404 Media is a journalist-founded company and needs your support. To subscribe, go to 404media.co. As well as other bonus content, subscribers can hear us answer their questions in future podcasts. Ask us anything you want on podcast at 404media.co. I'm your host, Joseph, and with me are two of the other 404 Media co-founders, the first being Sam Cole.
Hello.
And Jason Kebler.
Hi.
I feel like I've come into this episode with a lot more energy because we've moved the recording time and I just downed my second coffee. So this is now the energy of the podcast going forth.
I was going to say, you sounded a little peppier, a little more pep in the step.
We were recording it when I think I was coming down from the first coffee, and now we've moved into later in the day, and like I am ready to go. We're going to do this every single week. It's going to be amazing.
I feel like I'm post-lunch, like sleepy. Like I need to like,
right?
No, chug another Celsius maybe.
Exactly. Do that for next week for sure. Yep. All right, we just published this literally minutes ago by Jason.
I'm still socialing it. It's
tweeting
hot,
it.
And hot off the presses, like literally, it's still flaming.
I mean, I was making the podcast prep doc as we do every week, and I'm like, oh, let's do these stories. And Jason's like, wait, no, throw that out the window. I'm literally publishing this right now. And so, I mean, it's got good audio, so we have to put it on the podcast. Well, while Jason finishes socializing it, putting it on Mastodon or whatever, or Blue Sky or Twitter.
It's Mastodon, yeah.
There you go. Okay. The headline is deepfaked celebrity ads promoting Medicare scams run rampant on YouTube. I'm sure we've all seen scammy ads on YouTube in general, but this is something else, right? So, Jason, what are these ads?
Yeah, I mean, do you have it queued? Maybe the best way to do it is to play it, because I feel like the story is in the ad almost.
Yes, okay. Let me play this. It'll be about 40 seconds or so. Sorry if it's loud. We'll figure that out later. All right, here we go.
Hi, guys. It's Taylor Swift. Remember those stimulus checks? Well, there's a new thing going viral. The state is giving these $6,400 holiday packages to cover all your bills.
You won't be seeing this in the news, but we're about to be witnesses of a huge U.S. government scandal. Since January, the government has been supposed to be giving a $6,400 subsidy.
I've been telling you guys for months to claim this free $6,400. Anyone can get this, even if you don't have...
Yay! I'm living my life!
Are you crazy? You're about to throw away $6,400.
They're trying to downplay it as a mistake, but I'm not falling for it. The government just got caught red-handed hiding a $6,400 subsidy from each and every American. Let's break it.
All right, we're not going to play guess which deepfake celebrity that was. We haven't prepared for that, but I'm sure you could tell that the first one was Taylor Swift, then there was a Joe Rogan one, and then a few other celebs in there as well. Obviously, if you're only listening to this and not watching the YouTube version, you wouldn't see it. But there was a lot of visuals to go with that. There was, you know, footage of Taylor Swift, footage of Rogan as well. And I got to say, that's pretty convincing. At least the Rogan one is.
Are you going to apply for a $6,400 grant from the U.S. government?
I don't know if it's that convincing.
Yeah. Dr. Phil told me to do it, so I'm going to do it.
There you go.
He's a doctor.
So yes, we've all heard them, but what are these ads exactly? Right. What's going on here?
So Joe Rogan, Taylor Swift, Steve Harvey, Ice Cube, Andrew Tate, Oprah, The Rock, Will Smith. It's like a bunch of people. And there's essentially this scam called like a Medicare rebate and or like grant scam. And I couldn't even tell you where, like, what the underlying truth is. It's just like there's these Medicare scams that have gotten to the point where the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has warned about these ads like multiple times. And they essentially say, quote, scammers steal money from the public through fake HHS websites and social media schemes by offering fake HHS grants. So essentially, like, you click through on the ad and it takes you to one of like 40 different URLs where it sort of asks you to input your personal information, and then either your identity is stolen or it just like straight up robs you because it charges you some sort of fee.
So it sounds like that those sorts of scams have been going on for a long, long time, as you say, and the government's been warning about them, and now deepfakes are involved.
Yeah, and so that's what I wanted to get into, which is like, this is not brand new. We got a tip over the holidays from a college student, and I will get into that in a minute, but basically saying like, hey, I got these, and I you know, followed this to the bottom of the rabbit hole and create a spreadsheet of all of the different fake ads that I found. But YouTube, like YouTubers, celebrities, and YouTube viewers have been complaining about these specific ads for months, like months and months and months. If you search Reddit for like YouTube healthcare scam ad, you'll find like 15 different Reddit posts where people are saying like, hey, what is this? And it's not like one person posts this and then no one has any idea what they're talking about. It's like there's hundreds of comments on each of these saying like, hey, I get these ads all the time. Mm-hmm. If you search on YouTube for like YouTube scam Medicare ads, there's like hundreds of videos of YouTubers making ads trying to explain what these are. And then in like the Reddit post, there's a lot of people saying that they've been complaining to YouTube about it. And then beyond that, some of the celebrities who have been impersonated have said, hey, like, I'm going to sue over this. Like, this is not me.
Right.
My likeness is being stolen for the purpose of these ads. So, like, this should not be news to YouTube. Like, YouTube probably should have known about these ads anyway. But I think there have been a couple articles about this sort of scam and this sort of ad over the course of the last year. Like, here and there, there's been bits of reporting. What is new and different here is both the brazenness of the celebrity deepfakes and the celebrity voice cloning, as well as the scale of it. And so over the holidays, like I said, we got an email from this college student who I really would have loved to have included in the article, but they said that they were applying for jobs and didn't want their name to be Googleable.
Fair enough.
But they like sent me a spreadsheet, Google Doc, and some other stuff with their research. And it was like 25 videos of celebrities, like at least 25 videos of celebrities. And then sort of using that, using like Google's Ad Transparency Center, which is the ability to go and look up like who's running these ads, what other ads are they running, so on and so forth. They found 1,600 ads on YouTube for this same scam.
That's
and
crazy.
And they made a spreadsheet of how many views there were, and there's been over 195 million views of these ads.
So just to get more specific on that, you say 195 million of views on the ads. In the story, there's a few links of, here's a Steve Harvey video with 18 million. Here's one with 5.5 million of the same person. Then The Rock and Oprah with 4.6 million views. Is the 195 million just the total of all of those together? Like, where does that figure come from?
Yeah, so the student essentially found like 15 different YouTube accounts that were running these scam ads, and then took all of the ones that linked to one of 35 different Medicare scam URLs, ran that through the Transparency Center, scraped all of the information about each of those ads, and then put them into a spreadsheet. And then that 195 million is adding up the total views for all of those. And so, to be clear, not all of them are celebrity scams. It's like there's a lot of like quote unquote normal people who are also saying like, hey, I got, you know, this money from the government. So I would say it's not even quite half and half. Like, there's a variety of different ads, and I would say probably about a third of them are celebrity AI fakes, although those disproportionately seem to have the most views. It's like most of the really high view count ones are celebrity deepfakes. And then there's just like hundreds and hundreds of other ads. Some of them have like 100 views, some of them have like 5,000 views, and then there's a ton of them that have like hundreds of thousands or low million views. I was able to find about 40 different ads that had over a million views. And I think just to add insult to injury, it's like while I was researching this, like when you click the ad, it is itself a YouTube video. It's like a link to a YouTube video.
That's how the ads work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of those ads themselves had ads on them. And so it's like I had to watch an ad for something else before I saw the scam ad. And it's like, to be very clear, it like is a scam. There's no,
right?
Like the US government says it's a scam. And, you know, we got this list of all these videos back over the holidays. Most of these videos have been up for months and months and months. And I kind of just have been busy, so I haven't gotten around to the story until now. None of them have been deleted from what I can tell. It's like, it's possible that, you know, one or two around the edges have been deleted, but I clicked through, I don't know, like 100 different videos in the last hour of videos that have been up for a long time. I clicked through to all of these different ad providers in Google's Ad Transparency Center. It's like none of them have had any sort of sanction against them. None of the videos have been taken down. Like YouTube is seemingly not really doing anything to protect its users here.
And you mentioned YouTube there. I mean, do we have any idea of what YouTube or Google say in response to this, or what their policy is around this, or anything like that?
Yeah. So I do want to talk about this, because normally when we do a story like this, like we go to the company for comment pretty early in the process and give them quite a lot of time to respond and like show them the videos and this sort of thing. In this case, I didn't go to Google until very shortly before we published. And that was a deliberate decision. And I told them that in the email. I was like, look, here are 10 different Reddit posts that have hundreds of commenters saying that they've been reporting these ads to you. Here is Mr. Beast, who is the most popular YouTuber, I believe, or at least one of the most famous YouTubers. He's been impersonated, and he tweeted about this problem, and that video has 33 million views. Like the Mr. Beast tweet about how this is a problem has tons of views. It's like there's tons of YouTube videos about how this is a problem, so on and so forth. And I think part of the story is the fact that YouTube has not been able to detect and remove this on its own. And so I wanted people to be able to see the extent to which this is a problem. And so I sent them the spreadsheet of all of the videos, but I didn't want it to be a situation where we got comment, they deleted the problem off of the face of the internet, and then no one could see that it was an issue. It's right. Like this, people have known that this is an issue for literally months and have been screaming from the rooftops about it. And there's seemingly been no real action taken. And so I will update when I hear back from YouTube. Of course, I think yeah. In this case, it made more sense to be like, this is a well-known problem and they're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, we sort of have similar approaches come up, right, when we do content moderation stories, where before it would be, you know, very, very normal. You get comment, blah, blah, blah. And we will, of course, always give a company an opportunity to comment. But it sort of morphed into journalists becoming like de facto content moderators for some of the biggest platforms in the world, to the point where when we got leaked internal Facebook documents, there was a dedicated channel for escalating moderation issues flagged by journalists, which is crazy, right? So I totally understand your decision to, well, of course, we're still going to give them an opportunity to respond, but readers deserve to see how widespread this is and see the ads for themselves so they can understand just how crazy some of them are. So I guess we'll wait to see what YouTube says. I guess just lastly, what does this show us about YouTube or Google more generally, the fact that these have just been widely available for months and months and have racked up tens, if not hundreds of millions of views?
Yeah, I think Longtime fans of 404 Media will remember that in our first week, I wrote an article about how Instagram was giving me a bunch of ads for drugs and like crime and hacking tools and things like this. And I think it's one thing when a platform is not able to moderate the quote unquote normal content that its users are uploading. But I think when it comes to ads, it's like these platforms nominally have some sort of process for determining whether an ad suits their guidelines. And theoretically, that process should be actually more strict if a platform is making money off of these ads. It's like, you need to remember, these companies are paying Google to get their content on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so these are
Google
these
is are making money from it. Yeah.
Google is making money from it, and they're seemingly like not doing a very good job of detecting it. So there's that. There is also the sort of point where, and I think we'll probably explore this more over the coming weeks, where we're told, like, look at the amazing capabilities of generative AI and how it's going to make our lives easier, more efficient, like, you know, companies can fire workers, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't know, we're a year and a half into it and I'm not seeing it. I just am not. I've used a lot of generative AI tools pretty extensively. I think their use case is like relatively limited. You know, maybe it's helping some people write some emails here and there, but it's like the overwhelming uses that we're seeing of AI are like the stuff that Sam and Emmanuel have been reporting about, like, you know, deep fakes that are stealing people's identity, deep fakes that are being used to put people non-consensually into porn. And then what we've really started seeing over the last, really only the last few months, is like automated systems where just like a huge and unmoderatable amount of bullshit is being published, whether that's articles, whether that's ads, whether that's videos, whether that's, you know, the stuff that I reported, like these Facebook memes that we, you know, wrote about the other week. And it's clear like the biggest companies in the world are not able or ready to moderate these in any way that makes sense. And so I think just like browsing the internet is going to become a lot trickier. I just think that, you know, I think that the possibility that human created content is sort of drowned out by AI generated content is possible at some point, where it's just like the amount of shit that's being created will sort of crowd out what humans are actually making. Like that's kind of my big concern with generative AI. And I think that this and some of the Facebook AI stories we've talked about and some of the other stories we've done have shown that that is like closer to the reality we're getting to than any reality where like AI is going to help content creators make better content.
Right. The human created content is going to become a lovely sought after commodity, you know? Yeah. And we definitely have some more stories to come on that as well. Let's leave.
There's
that.
One thing like super briefly is that, the college student sent me a link to this recording from an open Discord that is like, this marketing professional, basically like learn how to do marketing vibes. And this person is not implicated in this specific scam or any scam that I know of. He's just like a hustle culture bro, like learn how to do internet marketing, make some money on the side with me, blah, blah, blah. And even that guy, like there's a quote from his sort of like advice column where he's like, quote, like everyone and his brother is making these fucking AI celebrity ads. And so it's like, even the people in the industry, in the ad industry, are like, this is what people are doing now. They're just stealing celebrity likenesses, spamming them all over the internet. And like, that is one of the dominant forms of internet marketing now. And this is one story we did. There was a great story in the New York Times today about it, this problem on Instagram. There was another story in The Verge about a different section of YouTube that's been taken over by AI generated content. It's like, we're quickly getting to a place where this flood is like not moderatable, I guess.
Yeah, totally. We'll leave that there. And when we come back after the break, we will talk about Sam's story and a very interesting FOIA response. We'll be right back after this. And we're back. This one from Sam. Texas Health Department claims it has nothing to do with warnings on porn from Texas Health Department. Obviously a very, very good headline there. First off, before we get into the FOIA, what are these warnings exactly, Sam? I think previous listeners may remember when we've alluded to them, but now this is more specifically about these warnings from particular states. So what's going on here?
Yeah, so I think we talked recently about how all these age verification laws are passing across the country when it comes to porn sites or like anything with material that could be harmful to minors is how the laws state it. So in Texas, they do it a little differently. Their law includes a requirement for porn sites to include this big, like minimum 14-point font warning from the Texas Health and Human Services. And the warning is supposed to say, it makes a bunch of claims. I can just kind of read the warning out. But part of it is that, you know, it says Texas Health and Human Services warning, pornography is potentially biologically addictive, is proven to harm human brain development, desensitizes brain reward circuits, increases conditioned responses, and weakens brain function. And then it goes on to talk about low self-esteem, body image, eating disorders, impaired brain development, mental illness, child exploitation, child pornography, increasing the demand for prostitution. It's just a long list of claims that just aren't at all backed up by science, but they all include that big label that says this is from the Texas Health and Human Services. That's in the law that has right to be on these sites now.
Yeah. So as you say, by law, whenever somebody from Texas goes to a porn site, they're going to see that massive disclaimer, which has no scientific basis. So after that news develops and, you know, this pop-up starts appearing, what do you do? You file a Freedom of Information Act request, right?
Yeah. And also just to back up a little bit and give some context, this warning was on a few sites to begin with when the law first got enacted, because it wasn't really clear how it was going to be enforced. If it was going to be enforced, it got challenged a bunch. It got struck down, and then it came back. There was an injunction. There's a stay on the injunction. It's been like a huge back and forth mess in Texas. And like rightfully so, because this is a big deal. But as of right now, the warning isn't on porn sites because it's not being enforced. So these sites have no reason to pay any attention to this law because there's no sign that it's actually going to be enforceable or constitutional. Gotcha. So yeah, that's kind of where it is right now. And of course that could change anytime. But yeah, so, you know, we saw this happen and, of course I emailed the press office at Health and Human Services in Texas and they were like, you need to talk to the authors of the bill and ask them. It's like, well, your name is all over this, so I'm talking to you. You know, it's like,
I mean, what did you ask them? Did you ask them like how you're going to enforce this? Like, what did you?
I was
want
just
to know?
Like, what is the deal? Like, what, like, do you stand by this? Like, is this something you, are these statements something that you endorse? Like, is this something that Health and Human Services has vetted? I don't remember what exactly.
Do you have scientific evidence on that sort of thing?
It was just kind of that, like, it was just kind of like, can you comment on this thing that like your name is on? And they were like, no. So at that point, Jason and I decided to start filing FOIAs. We've been filing FOIAs about age verification for a while in these states where these porn age verification laws are being enacted. But we filed one in Texas specifically to the Health and Human Services Commission because that's a government agency, obviously. And that FOIA request, let's see, what did it say? It was pretty broad, but included any kind of communication basically about the this particular law, and I named the law which is HB 1181. Any communication, any proposals, contracts, documentation, mentions of it, mentions of things like Pornhub, age verification, related to the law. So there was a lot that could have been caught up in this net, and they could have replied and said, narrow this because it's a lot. That encompasses a lot of things. Texas obviously is a battleground for these topics. Mm-hmm. But they replied and said, no responsive documents, which, like, I don't know. I call bullshit. I don't think that that's
What was your immediate reaction to that? So, as you say, you file this FOIA. It is, it's broad, but at the same time, it's also specific in that you are asking for a lot of information, but you are specifying what information you want
about
as well.
It
should have got something responsive. I mean, what was your immediate reaction when they were like, we don't have any documents responsive to this?
It was just kind of like, no way. Like, there's no way. Either you're not looking in the right way, you're stonewalling us on purpose, which would be very illegal, or there was no communication within the department, which is a huge problem because, again, they're endorsing publicly, like, on the law that this is from them. The law is saying it's from them. So if they weren't involved whatsoever, that's bizarre and not true in the law.
Like, that might be even worse.
Someone is lying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be worse. That would be just as bad. So, yeah. And then from there, we appealed it. And we said, try again, basically. And Jason, maybe you can talk more about the process of appealing, because this is, and you guys are more experienced with FOIA than I am. But yeah, we sent an appeal this morning that was like, look again, basically.
Yeah. I think that there's maybe, like, fatigue to, I'll just say it, like, Republican-dominated state does anti-science thing, and like, in bad faith, essentially, where it's just like, this is possibly not the biggest story that's happening right now, but I think it's extremely outrageous. It's like an outrageous story because, as Sam mentioned, it's like the law, the text of the law states that this absurd anti-science message is coming from the Texas Department of Health and Human Services. And if the state legislature invented that without any input whatsoever from that department, that's bad. Like, that's a lie. It's not a message from them. That's a lie. That's a public lie that they're making, like, if that's the case. If it's the case that the Texas Department of Health and Human Services did have some input into it, and that department is saying they have no responsive documents whatsoever, like, nothing at all, then that defies belief, or they are lying. So they were either, like, fully divorced from this process, and so the public message is a lie, or they were involved in the process and they're lying to us and breaking the law in their public, their response to our FOIA. And we know that they are lying. We know that like, a little of both is probably true. It's like, I have no reason to believe that the Texas Department of Health and Human Services, like, actually endorses this message. It's like, presumably they are, filled with scientists and people who care about health, et cetera. That's what we've seen in other states, even when there's been sort of like an anti-science governor or legislature. Like, often the health department is like, we still care about vaccines and health and so on and so forth. But there's a website called XBiz that does reporting on the porn industry. And they wrote an article in which they emailed the Department of Health and Human Services for comment before we filed our FOIA request. And theoretically, not even theoretically, it's like, that email itself should have been a responsive document to our request.
Right.
So that's an example of a document that we know, like, it wouldn't shed much light. Like, that wouldn't be that interesting of a document to get back. But we get other journalists asking for comment Like we get those documents back in our FOIA requests all the time. And those should be a responsive document. And so it's like something is wrong here. And I think it's pretty egregious. And then the other thing I'll say is, like Sam mentioned, we filed similar requests in other states with their health departments. Utah, for example, has a similar law, but the Utah law doesn't have a specific message from its Department of Health and Human Services. It just has a similar law that says that's like a porn ban law. But we filed with their Department of Health and Human Services, and we got back like 300 pages of documents from within the Department of Health and Human Services. And frankly, like they were bullshit documents. It was like articles about the law, like newsletters, like just random stuff that gets populated because someone in that department signed up for like the Salt Lake Tribune, and then the Salt Lake Tribune wrote about it and it mentioned it, and that creates a responsive document.
But you still got something. Yeah.
But we still got something. And so to Sam's point, it's like, it's there, they have to have something. And yeah, we are appealing it because, and in our appeal, we've sort of made some of those arguments where it's like, at bare minimum, this XBiz email should be responsive. And it's like, I don't think it's super useful for us to get back one email from another journalist and then HHS saying like no comment. But I think it's basically just like, they're not providing the documents. They either did a bad search. Like, I don't know. They didn't do a good search. And Texas is actually a very interesting state because they have to like ask the state attorney general or secretary of state, I forget which. I think it's the attorney general, for a review of the documents before they release them. If the government wants to withhold the documents, they have to ask the attorney general for permission to withhold those documents. And that process itself is a public record. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but basically like that entire process should create documents that would then be responsive to our request. So that's a very long way of saying like, this is nonsense. It's complete nonsense.
All I'll just add on that is like, if they're saying, well, what they're saying is we're not withholding documents. They're saying we have no responsive records. So to speculate, if they were going with that response rather than, oh, we're withholding, there wouldn't be that reporting process. I don't want to assume malicious intent where we don't have evidence of that. But I would say that, well, if you just say there's no responsive documents, you don't have to go through that process then. And I'll leave it as that. Right. For those interested in those sorts of discussions about freedom of information, subscribers do get access to our FOIA forum. We do that about every month, maybe every 6 weeks, something like that, where we go really, really deep for an hour or two on FOIAs. I'm sure we'll probably bring this up in the next one. And something I just thought now, after you've done that appeal, maybe the two of you should FOIA for the processing notes of the first request, which is where you get communications between the FOIA officers about that request. And sometimes you can find them being mad at what you've asked for.
Funny.
Yeah. and then if they say there's no records of that, that is like absolute bullshit. Like that's just not possible.
Someone's got to be fired. Like that's crazy. If they were just like sent to spam, you know,
right.
Like,
that would be
no
complete
documents,
bullshit.
That would be insane. So, and we're experiencing similar things with other departments in Texas, which we're going to write more about. But yeah, it's just like this whole thing is very, very sus.
Yeah.
In Texas.
Totally. So if you want to know more about the FOIA forum, subscribe and tune in for that. Jason, did you want to say something?
I think that is a good topic for our next FOIA forum, which we probably need to do one relatively soon. Not promising that it will definitely be on this topic, but this saga has actually been quite interesting in ways that are sort of hard to explain in an article, unless you like really care about this stuff. But if you do really care about this stuff, there's some like machinations that have been going on with this specific Texas request and a few others where it's like, if you really want to be pedantic about it, which we do,
That's a whole thing, man. Yeah. That's like our thing.
It's just like, dude, like, okay, you don't have any documents about this. Like, tell us how you processed this request then. Like, we, in our filing of it, there should be like documents created which are then subject to FOIA, which we can then go and find. So it's also a good example of, I don't think we've talked a lot about appeals in the FOIA forum. And appeal is basically like when they say no and you say, go look again, are you sure? And very often they end up like finding the documents.
It works.
This is a good example of sort of how we did that process, because sometimes in the appeal you end up being like, well, here's like all this additional research that we are doing for you because apparently you were unable to do it yourself. And it's not to, as you said, like ascribe malintent, because we don't know. But it's shocking how often a place will say, like, we don't have any documents. And then you're just like, sure about that, buddy? And then they're like, oh, here's 1,000 documents.
Yeah, I left it down the back of the sofa or something. Here's a PDF I dropped.
Yeah.
We should definitely do that in the next FOIA forum. All right. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, I'll now play us out. But if you're a paying 404 Media subscriber, we're going to talk about hacking trains now, which we've been meaning to do for weeks, but we're only able to get to it now. You can subscribe and gain access to that content at 404media.co. As a reminder, 404 Media is journalist-founded and supported by subscribers. If you wish to subscribe to 404 Media and directly support our work, please go to 404media.co. You'll get unlimited access to our articles and an ad-free version of this podcast. You'll also get to listen to the subscribers-only section, where we talk about a bonus story each week. Another way to support us is by leaving a 5-star rating and review for the podcast. That stuff genuinely helps us out and helps other people find the podcast too. This has been 404 Media. We will see you again next week.